The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear we're on our way down. We must take America back, Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stattmiller, with you on this 24th day of October 2019. That be a Thursday. And this has gone unannounced, but today I've got James Fetzer on with me. And something I noticed when people interview Mr. Fetzer, it's jump in the middle of the stream and let's just rock and roll with the current subject matter. But very few people have ever gone to the trouble to give you the background on Jim Fetzer. He was born in Pasadena, California, December 1940. Following his graduation from South Pasadena High School, he went to Princeton University and graduated magna cum laude. He was under the supervision of Carl G. Hempel, won the Dickinson Prize, joined the United States Marine Corps, was a second lieutenant in an artillery unit. Until the early 60s, he was stationed in Okinawa, Japan. During his service in the 60s, he was married, having a son, remarried in the 1970s, teaching at the University of Kentucky. And soon after promotion to captain, he resigned to enter graduate school, having attained a master's degree from Indiana University. He studied at Columbia University for a year, then returned to Indiana University in 1970, gained a PhD in history of science and philosophy of science. Now, his career, he became assistant professor at the University of Kentucky in 1970 and received a University of Kentucky Student Government's First Distinguished Teaching Award. They didn't give him the tenure in 1977, and he spent the next 10 years visiting positions at University of Virginia, University of Cincinnati, University of North Carolina, at Chapel Hill, and University of South Florida. After 10 years without a tenured backed position, in 1987 he was hired as full tenure professor at University of Minnesota Duluth. In 1996, he received a Distinguished McKnight University Professorship from the University of Minnesota, a title that recipients retain until they retire. He did retire from the university in 2006. And then jumping back on the time clock here, he received his National Science Foundation Fellowship in the late 70s. He contributed a chapter to the book on Hans Reichenbach. In 1990, he received the Medal of the University of Helsinki. He assisted theorists in computer science. He joined a debate over proper types of interference in computing. In the late 90s, he was called to organize a symposium on philosophy of mind and authored textbooks on cognitive science and artificial intelligence. He is an expert on philosopher Carl G. Hempel. Now, he published over 100 articles. He's written 20 books on philosophy and science and philosophy of cognitive science, especially on artificial intelligence and computer science. He wrote Conscience Evolving in 2002. He wrote Conscience Evolving, a collection of studies on the past, the present, and future. The book is divided into three sections. He then went on to found the international journal Minds and Machines, which he edited for 11 years, and founded the Academic Library Studies in Cognitive Systems. Now, folks, I could go on here. There's more, but I'm not going to bore you. But I wanted to make sure the bona fides were put up in place, because he's known in the circles as being a conspiracy theorist. James Fetzer, how did this happen?
Oh, John, that was very good of you to lay that out. Actually, I mean, as you say, there's so much more. I published 24 scholarly books, many of which were edited. I have 7 authored or co-authored books. After my retirement at the University of Minnesota Duluth campus in 2006, I'd already begun doing collaborative research on the assassination of JFK and published 3 books that actually shattered the cover-up. I brought together, as I have done again and again and again, the best experts on different aspects of the case. I had a world authority on the human brain who was also an expert on wound ballistics, a PhD in physics, who was also an MD and board certified in radiation oncology, which is a treatment of cancer using X-ray therapy, a physician who'd been present when JFK's moribund body was brought into trauma room number 1 and who 2 days later was responsible for the care and treatment of his alleged assassin in trauma room number 2, a legendary photo and film analyst, another PhD in physics, this time with a specialization in electromagnetism, properties of light and images of moving objects, who did absolutely brilliant work demonstrating internal inconsistencies in the Zapruder film, which some to this day believe is the most accurate thing evidence we have, the closest to absolute truth. When it's a manufactured film, it was reprocessed using the special effects and optical printing, whereby you can combine any foreground with any background, you can make any alteration you want. They could have had Jack doing backflips had they so desired. More recent research by Larry Rivera has established, based upon interviews done with the 4 motorcycle patrolmen who escorted the Kennedy limousine,
right,
that the driver, William Greer, brought the vehicle to a halt. And during the halt, Officer Hargis, riding to the left rear, who'd been hit by the debris from this blowout that entered Jack's right temple and blew his brains out with such force that Officer Hargis initially thought he himself had been shot. Hargis gets off his bike, runs between the Secret Service limo and the presidential limo, which would have been impossible had they been in motion, up to the grassy knoll. Officer Douglas Jackson on the right motors up the grassy knoll. We have photos where you can see the imprints of the motorcycle, and a few reporters actually reported in their stories, in pursuit of a gunman, 5 Secret Service agents dismounted the Kennedy limousine and surrounded one, taking a piece of skull from a little boy, throwing it in the back of the vehicle. What we have is over 400 frames were removed from that area because it was such obvious proof of Secret Service complicity in the assassination, where there are altogether 15 different indications So what I'm really getting at, John, in accord with your point, I've been doing this collaborative research of bringing experts together again and again. I did it on JFK. I've done it on 9/11. I've done it on Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, Orlando and Dallas, Parkland, Charlottesville. It was my belief that someone with my special background and training perhaps ought to become involved in this kind of research after I witnessed the editor-in-chief of the Journal of the American Medical Association on television in 1992 assailing everyone who'd ever done serious work on the assassination and exposed the inadequacy of the Warren Report, and assailing Oliver Stone's film JFK as docu-fiction, when I knew it to be the most accurate a comprehensive and complete presentation of what actually happened at Dealey Plaza on 22 November 1963, right, ever presented to the American people through the mass media. It's not flawless, John. He doesn't know that actually Lee Oswald was standing in the doorway as the motorcade passed by. He thought there were only three hit teams, where actually I've identified six by name, rank, and serial number. Ole Domegaard is seventh, and we've now found there were an eighth, so there were eight different shooters. And he didn't realize his Pruder film had been massively altered because he was given false information by someone on whom he depended at the time.
Yeah, Jim, have you ever spoken yourself, and I didn't want to center on JFK just yet. I was going to regress back to that point. But have you ever spoken to Marina Oswald in person?
No, I haven't spoken to Marina in person.
I have.
Yeah, very, very good.
And Jim, the first question I asked her was, did your husband, Lee Harvey, kill JFK? And the look on her face, and she looked me straight in the eye, gave me a direct answer, and she said, no, he did not. I said, my second question is, why have you not come out with this information? Her response to me was, I was told I have two choices. Sit down, shut up, go along with what we tell you, or, worst case scenario, the best case scenario, if you start talking, you'll be expelled from the country. You'll be sent out of country. The worst case scenario is that you're going to cease to exist. And that was told to her directly by government officials and Secret Service. And people are wondering today why, when Trump took office, he wanted his own private security in there. I think Donald Trump knows that we make presidents go away in this country, and there truly is conspiracy and deep deceit.
You're 100% correct. It's ludicrous how blatant the lunatic left has become in attacking Trump and threatening his assassination. You even have prominent Hollywood figures, Tom Arnold most recently, talking about taking out JFK. You had a series talking about when he went to Dallas on the 17th that, you know, remember what happened to another president. I mean, it is so blatant. You're absolutely correct. Trump has security from NYPD cops who are really good, and they are providing him with the kind of protection he needs. There have been, as far as I can tell, maybe a dozen, 19 attempts to take him out. John, it's just outrageous. And the fact is that the Democrats have completely lost their way, sir. They're so out of contact with reality. You even have Hillary Clinton demonstrating that she is completely demented by attacking Tulsi Gabbard, of all persons, as a Russian asset, Jill Stein as another. I mean, look, she wants to run again for president. I think that would be great to have someone who's obviously demented at the head of a party that's become lunatic. This whole impeachment thing is completely ridiculous, too, John. I've done a lot of research on the Ukraine thing. I've read the transcript. I've read the reports about it, the whole bit. It was all completely innocuous and proper. We even have a treaty. We have a treaty on mutual assistance in criminal investigations. Trump was making an inquiry asking for the Ukrainian government's assistance in investigating Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, where Joe Biden, I mean, John, it's astonishing. Paper after paper, article after offer says that Trump has made false allegations about Biden for, you know, corruption for which there's no evidence. Joe Biden at the Council on Foreign Relations boasted about how he threatened the Ukrainian government to withhold $1 billion in support if they didn't fire the prosecutor who's investigating Burisma and Hunter Biden. And then he said, he gave him 6 hours to do it, and then he said, son of a bitch, they did it. Yep. They fired him. He's boasting about it.
Yeah, Jim, we've actually played that clip on the very same clip on this program.
That's excellent, John. I have also on my own radio show. But, I mean, look. look at the state of the mainstream media. They are so corrupt. They have so abandoned the principles of journalism. They give no honest reporting on any subject whatsoever. So when I, in an effort as a citizen journalist, attempt to report the truth about a whole host of these efforts, Sandy Hook, Boston bombing, Orlando, Dallas, Parkland, Charlottesville, look what happens. I get saddled with a completely fabricated lawsuit, and believe me, this death certificate is this
okay,
lawsuit.
Okay, okay. Now we're gonna lead up to that, Jim. You got to let me do my job when moderating the show. You've got tons of information.
You got it.
And I can tell you do radio because you don't allow any dead time. All right. The issue here that is currently in front of us. You wrote a book and
edited
a book, and it has caused an absolute maelstrom. And that's why, Mr. Fetzer, I read your bio and what is going on with Jim Fetzer, because this is just not a journalist, or this is just not somebody that was a tenured professor at some university someplace. You have been in the mix. Your bona fides support at least people paying attention to you and not outright calling you the CIA termed phrase conspiracy theorist. And I think what is happening to you, Jim, after looking at this, seeing this lawsuit come up and everything else, they've got to shut Jim Fetzer up, or at least smack him hard enough where it slows your roll, so to speak.
Oh, I think that's completely right. This is it's a classic example of what's known as a slap suit, a strategic lawsuit against public participation that's intended to punish those who, in their role as citizen journalists, expose corruption by the government in order to not only retaliate against them, but to set an example for others so they won't be encouraged by what he has done. But just to illustrate the enormity of the fraud being perpetrated by the media about this case, John, it's another edited collection. I mean, I've specialized in bringing together experts from diverse directions to take conspiracy theories, whether it's about JFK, 9/11, Sandy Hook, what have you, from theories in the weak sense of conjectures, rumors, or speculations to theories in the strong sense of empirically testable explanatory hypotheses like Newton's theory of gravitation, Einstein's theory of relativity, Darwin's theory of evolution, with special attention to sorting out the authentic from the inauthentic evidence. That's a key to it. What we found in the case of JFK, for example, was that the autopsy x-rays had been altered to conceal a fist-sized blowout to the back of the head, that there was internal evidence of a second shot to the head, that the brain shown in diagrams and photographs in the National Archives wasn't even the brain of JFK. I mean, you know,
that's the brain that we're never going to see because, well, it was stolen.
There may be a relatively innocuous explanation. It was in a stainless steel container. It was only about a half a brain. Jack had half his brains blown out in Dealey Plaza.
Right.
And it may be that Admiral Berkeley gave it to Bobby Kennedy, so when the body was reinterred in Arlington with the eternal flame, that the brain was buried with the body. So it may have an innocuous explanation, but what is not innocuous is that they have a completely intact brain. I mean, virtually no damage at all to the cerebellum, which is a compact part of the brain at the base.
Kind of like the bullet found on the gurney at the hospital.
Yeah. That's another example of fabricated evidence. I mean, it turns out the magic bullet theory isn't even anatomically possible. David W. Mantic, MD, PhD, with whom I began collaborating in late 1992, just as he was about to enter the National Archives, where he told me he thought he'd find evidence of a second shot to the head, but also proof that the x-rays had been altered. And I told him we had what we were looking for either way, because what we were engaging was falsification. We were attempting to test the Warren Commission report by trying to falsify it, which we succeeded in doing in spades.
All right, hold on. We are up against a break here, Jim. My guest today, Jim Fetzer. Get on the phone, get on your email. Jim's going to be with us for the balance of the program here. Folks, it's discovery time.
In a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
We are back. You know, Jim, back in the 90s, we had opportunity to go to a hearing in Washington, D.C. And Arlen Specter, along with Thompson, he's, I guess, now dead, and other notables that were on this panel, Senator Cole was there, Dianne Feinstein was there, and they all wanted to know about these militias. Well, at one point, Arlen Specter, and I don't like speaking ill of the dead, but Specter got a little agitated with what was going on. And one of the panelists, not the senators, but one of the panelists were there to give testimony on the militias in this country, made mention of the magic bullet theory. And Specter went absolutely gonzo. Jim, I'd never seen a senator do this. He was totally upset that people were not buying his magic bullet theory, and the entire place laughed, including the panelists. Some of the senators were trying to hide their snickering up their sleeve, and he got bent out of shape about that. You know, this the whole JFK thing has never really been all the details brought to light. And anybody that went, and we're talking about something that happened November 22nd, 1963, and we've got as many answers on that one as we did the incident on 9/11. Now, to your book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. And in that book, it alleges that Leonard Posner circulated a fraudulent copy of his son Noah Posner's death, that he floated a phony death certificate. Now, nobody died at Sandy Hook. Supposedly there were 27 people that died there. Jim, who died at Sandy Hook?
Well, the fact of the matter is, John, it was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control, and we have proven that so thoroughly in the book that the judge ruled I couldn't introduce any of that evidence, even though it had been in my original answer, my explanation of how I was going to deal with this lawsuit. Two lines of defense. Number one, where I brought together 13 experts, John, I brought together 13 experts, including six PhDs, and we'd established that the school had been closed by 2008, that there were no students there, that was done to promote gun control. We have another contributor, Paul Preston, who has a radio show called Agenda 21, who himself, a school administrator, was troubled by what he saw broadcast from Newtown that day, reached out to his contacts in the Obama Department of Education, all of whom confirmed to him that had been a drill, that no students had been harmed, and that it was done to promote gun control. The court wouldn't allow me to introduce any of that evidence, even though I explained in multiple submissions and outlined the evidence in its support that we'd been able to establish those basic features, that it was substantiated by a sign there that said everyone must check in, by porta potties already in place, by pizza and bottled water available at the firehouse. Have you ever heard of a crime scene where they have pizza and porta potties? I mean, it's absurd. Yeah. So many were there with name tags on lanyards. There were parents bringing children to the scene. No parent is going to bring a child to the scene of a child shooting massacre. In the manual, we even have the manual, which I included as Appendix A in the book. It states quite clearly everyone must check in with a controller when they arrive. It's standard for FEMA exercises, and they provide restrooms and refreshments. They identify the participants by color-coded name tags on lanyards. So we had all this evidence. In fact, it was a two-day exercise. They had the rehearsal on the 13th, going live on the 14th, which was supposed to be the day of the actual shooting. But participants became confused, so they put up donation websites already on the 13th.
I remember, Jim, seeing those.
Adam Lanza, who is supposed to be the shooter, and this is a pure creature of fiction. I mean, just to offer a couple illustrations of the absurdity of the persona they call Adam Lanza. He's about 6 feet tall. He might weigh 112 pounds. He's supposed to pack 30 pounds of weaponry. There's no evidence whatsoever. The ATF agent responsible for investigating that he or his mother had ever even been to a rifle range. And get this, among his bizarre idiosyncrasies, he had an aversion to touching metal, so that rather than touch a doorknob, he'd have to use a rag. Well, did someone forget to mention that these weapons are made out of metal? So it's all completely absurd. I mean, what's been foisted off on the American people. So when I released the book, it was produced by CreateSpace, which was at a subsidiary of Amazon.com, went on sale with Amazon.com 22 October, sold nearly 500 copies when it was banned on 19 November. It was too hot, John, so I released it for free as a PDF. And any of your listeners can download it for themselves by putting in the title Nobody Died at Sandy Hook PDF and have their own copy on their own desktop right now.
Hold on 1 second. We've got a bottom of the hour break, long segment coming up. Stay tuned.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s. Along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Well, it's all right, riding around in the breeze. Well, it's all right, if you live the life you please. Well, it's all right.
Life and what it means to each of us with the ability to lead it by our own standard. What a concept. Jim... this issue with you being sued, what was the attorney for Posner was a one Jacob Zimmerman, and the case went forward. You were found guilty of exactly what?
Well, the case was very cleverly drawn. The first line of defense I had outlined in my response to the complaint. And when you're served with a lawsuit, you have two options. You can seek to move for its dismissal, or you can answer with a defense. And because I had this massive evidence published in the book, I thought it would be beneficial to have it presented in a court, in a legal framework, for the American people to understand what had happened. I explained my second line of defense would then focus more narrowly on the death certificate per se, for which in the book I'd laid out a dozen reasons for believing that it was a fabrication. In fact, the background, John, that practically no one knows because the media isn't reporting it, is that this death certificate was made available to my Sandy Hook research colleague, Kelly Watt, in 2014 by the plaintiff, by Leonard Posner. That he had called her up to initiate conversations, we believe, retrospectively, to find out the current state of Sandy Hook research because she was very active. And over a six-month period, they had over 100 hours of conversation, laughing, joking, good-natured. She told him over and over she didn't believe a word he said, didn't believe he had a son, didn't believe he died, asked for proof over and over. He, at one point, sent her a link to the Mel Gibson, Julia Roberts movie Conspiracy Theory, and she replied by sending him a link to the movie Big Fat Liar. And they would laugh about it. Now, they had an unusual parting when she explained to Lenny that she wanted to make a donation to his, the fund for the Sandy Hook survivors. And he said, why? He says, you don't believe I lost a son, so why would you do that? And Kelly explained, because there's going to be a class action lawsuit at some point against you, and I want to be a part of it. And he said, F you, bitch, and hung up on her. Wow. Now, yeah, I wanted that evidence before the court, but the way it all played out, although Kelly was there present and available to testify, my attorneys believe that given the testimony that had preceded, and because her exchange was prior to the time at which they were arguing, he had reacquired PTSD, allegedly because of my publications. I mean, this is so far-fetched, John, if I don't spell it out. I mean, you cannot believe what's going on here. They had a psychiatrist videotaped who was testifying that Leonard Posner was recovering from the PTSD induced by the death of his son during this shooting at Sandy Hook, and he would have led a normal life but for discovering these sentences, and they'd cited exactly four sentences, three of which I'd published in the book in the first edition, 2015, repeated in the second edition, 2016, because most of the chapters were the same. And also that, again, in a memorandum I'd authored for Robert David Steele, who put together about 130-page Sandy Hook memorandum series for the President of the United States with the latest cutting-edge research on Sandy Hook. And may I say that the book was 446 pages with the 13 contributors. Leonard Posner and Noah were mentioned on only 17 pages of the book. There was nothing about what we were doing that was targeting him or Noah. The reason he was of great interest is because the Newtown Registrar of Vital Statistics, Debbie Aurelia, was refusing to release death certificates for the victims, which had been the common practice in Connecticut as elsewhere in the United States for like nearly 200 years. In fact, it would turn out she'd actually entered into secret negotiations with the state legislature so she wouldn't have to release these death certificates, no doubt aware that the issuance of a fake death certificate is a crime. In any case, this death certificate that Lenny had put up on a blog for Kelly in 2014, he already knew at the time was not the current version of the death certificate, because in 2013 he'd made alterations. He changed the address of the decedent. Now, John, ask yourself, when's the last time you heard of somebody changing the residence after they were dead? The fact is the death certificate he shared with Kelly in 2014 had no file number. It had the wrong estimated time of death at 11 a.m. when the shooting officially took place between 9:30 and 9:40. It had no town certification. It had no state certification, unlike the one that was attached to the complaint, which had all of the above. And nevertheless, in the complaint, and this is just a reflection of the complete indefensibility of this entire lawsuit, it asserted there were no material differences between this state-certified death certificate and the one published in the book, and therefore that I had defamed Leonard Posner by suggesting he had circulated a fabricated death certificate. Well, I mean, obviously, having a file number, having a state certification, having a town certification are all material differences. And in fact, it turns out to be Connecticut law that not even parents are allowed to have uncertified death certificates. So here you had Leonard Posner with an uncertified death certificate that by Connecticut law he wasn't entitled to possess, all of which was spelled out in the briefs that I submitted prior to the summary judgment, and where indeed an attorney who'd been advising my business manager for Moonrock Books, where Mike Palachek and I, Mike had been the series editor for the book. He suggested the title and authored the preface, whereas I brought together all the collaborators, composed the contributors page, organized the book and all that, done all the editing. We realized that since Amazon.com was cutting us off, we needed our own distributor, and we founded Moonrock Books.
I often now, wondered who these people were. Now I understand. Thank you.
Yeah. So Dave Gaheri was our business manager for Moonrock Books. Well, because Dave was also being sued. I mean, the three of us, three parties were being sued. Me as the editor, Mike as a series editor, and Moonrock Books as the company, the publisher. A publisher cannot represent itself. So that Dave had secured Reed Peterson, who's the local attorney here in Madison. I had been approached long before that if there were ever any legal issues, a fellow with a great deal of trial experience from California by the name of Alexander J. Batale had volunteered to come to my legal assistance. But because Dave, as a company, Moonrock Books, needed an attorney, he couldn't be without one. Reed Peterson and Alexander Batale, A.J., who was, anchored through Reed Peterson here in Wisconsin. You have to gain special permission if you're not licensed to practice law in Wisconsin, represented Moonrock Books. And my presumption was always that once the company was out, that Reed Peterson and AJ would move to defend Mike Palachek, and then eventually when Mike was out, they'd move to defend me. It turned out that after Dave settled, Reed Peterson disappeared to take a trip around the world, sailing around the world. I mean, it was quite extraordinary. And AJ Alexander Batale no longer had an anchor. In any case, prior to that all happening, when he saw my motion for summary judgment, he said it would be stronger if I had document examiners, experts who could attest that this was indeed not an authentic death certificate, which was a brilliant idea. So we tracked down a fellow by the name of Larry Wickstrom from Minnesota who'd actually done prior work of document certification for Reed Peterson, mostly having to do with bankruptcies, mortgages, phony, fake financial documents. And yet another, a fellow I happen to know incidentally in California, whose name is Asher Robertson, Ash Robertson, who's also a forensic document expert. Once we were on the trail, I realized here I actually was in contact with Asher Robertson because he's a close friend of a fellow named Sterling Harwood, who's both a PhD and a JD. He no longer practices law, but he teaches at Evergreen College out in California in philosophy, interestingly. So we had lots of overlaps. And I had learned of Ash through Sterling. In any case, Larry Wickstrom wrote in his report that he was dumbfounded to discover a series of fabricated death certificates for a child that had been issued by the state of Connecticut. He even told me over the phone, though you can virtually read the same words in his report, that he found it mind-boggling that the state of Connecticut was issuing fabricated death certificates and even providing different fabricated death certificates to parties to the same litigation. Ash Robertson confirmed Wickstrom's report and added in addition that he'd reviewed the Social Security card for Noah Posner and determined that it was a fake. It turns out that the Social Security Administration has changed the format of the card some 35 times. So if you know when the card was issued, you can confirm determine what form was being used at the time, and if it's not the proper form, you know it's a fake.
And Jim, let me at this point make the listeners understand that there's a very important point here about birth and death certificates, because the state has so much interest in the life of a person because there's all kinds of sureties and all kinds of business that's conducted in that individual's name. So it is very important for the birth certificates and the death certificates, because these are the people that they have learned how to fleece and make a monetary gain off of it. Now, let me stop you. And Leonard Posner had supposedly at the time a 6-year-old son. Now, a point of a contention was brought up on a host show, and there are subsequent questions that were being asked. Somebody suggested that corpus delicti, okay, what would be wrong with getting an order for the exhumation here of Noah, supposedly Leonard Posner's son?
Nothing, except the judge wouldn't even allow me to introduce all the evidence I've been describing heretofore, and even though I had two expert document examiners who both certified not only was a death certificate that I had published and written about and described as a fabrication, but that three other death certificates. I mean, how many versions of a death certificate do you think one person can have? This little boy had, it turns out, five. The four that had surfaced up to this point in time, they both concluded all four of them were fabrications. I had that evidence into the judge. And would you believe that the court, during the oral hearing, had a conversation with Jake Zimmerman, the representative of the plaintiff, about how if he were to strike these expert reports, that could be grounds for appeal. So he wasn't going to strike them. He was just going to set them aside as mere opinions, which is what he did. I mean, I was sitting there without counsel next to Mike Palachek while the judge made these actions of dismissing all the evidence I'd laid out with great care, painstaking. I had a prepared statement. It was even at the judge's request entered into evidence where I laid all out all the evidence that indeed this was a fabricated death certificate. And in the case of a summary judgment, John, you may or may not be aware, they're only permissible if there are no disputed facts. if there are any disputed facts in the case, they have to be sent to the jury. Well, in this instance, the most crucial question, the authenticity of the death certificate, was a disputed fact. It was in violation of Connecticut state law. It had no state or town certification, and I had two expert document examiners certify not only was that document a fabrication, but three others that had surfaced prior in the case were also fabrications. The judge set it all aside and went ahead and ruled anyway in favor of the plaintiff.
Now, the obvious question here is, Jim, that you went into court without any legal representation. What was the thinking behind that?
Well, nobody would represent me. Mike and I searched high and low. We must have tried, 50 different attorneys. We couldn't find anyone who would represent us. In fact,
really?
It was, I mean, it's a hot potato. It was a miracle to me that after the summary judgment, after liability had already been determined, I continued to reach out. And I called, this is really a First Amendment issue. Let me make it very clear. As I may have mentioned in the beginning, John, this is a slap suit. This is to punish somebody for performing acts of journalism that expose corruption by the deep state. So
we got a break coming up here in just a minute or so, Jim. I want to slow this roll down so we can take this break. Folks, I know you got a lot of questions out there, and we'll take your calls into the second hour. But I just wanted to make clear here, the circuit judge, Frank Remington, as you heard the man say, he's holding side court here with Jacob Zimmerman. This is the guy that was representing Leonard Posner, and decided what they were going to look at in this court hearing and what they weren't. Now, with what they have set aside, Jim, now on appeal, you can only go into an appeal on the basis of you're there to refute something that went on in that courtroom as far as evidence went. By the judge setting this aside, Does it mar the chances of an appeal and you having a successful appeal?
Just the opposite. He violated the protocols for summary judgment. If there are disputed facts, he cannot render a summary judgment. It has to be sent to the jury. He went ahead and rendered a summary judgment anyway. That's probably the single strongest point for the appeal,
John. Now, I just now wonder, because now this is a procedural matter with the court, and obviously this judge screwed up.
Yes.
Would there be any attorneys that were willing to take that up for you?
Well, yeah, that was what I was trying to explain. I continued to look for an attorney, and I found one listed as a First Amendment, and this is really basically a First Amendment case, and I reached out to him, and I was astounded. I was driving to my home when I got a phone call back from him, and I explained to him that this was a slap suit masquerading as a defamation, and he took it up with his firm, which has 50 or 60 attorneys, big firm here in Madison. They agreed that he could represent me.
All right. And so far, his bar attorney card is still present, but it may not be in the future. Okay, hold on, everybody. We've got to take that break. James Fetzer is my guest today. I appreciate him coming up on short notice. We're talking about Sandy Hook today, folks. Sandy Hook Elementary School, Newtown, Connecticut.
Hey, this check is wrong. I worked a holiday and 7 hours of overtime. Not getting paid correctly is a real pain. It could also hurt our boss if our company provides out-of-compliance checks. That's right. Construction companies doing business with the government can get fined, or officials of the companies can go to jail if the checks aren't right. It's a law. The Davis-Bacon Act has 30 compliance issues for every check. But there is an easy way for construction companies to be in compliance. EMARS offers Compliant Client, a web-based system that finds and corrects all 30 of the possible out-of-compliance check issues. Users of Compliant Client report an 80% savings in time and money. Running a weekly payroll usually takes about 5 minutes. All 15,000-plus clients of EMARS have never had a legal compliance issue. Plus, they sleep better on check day. Contact EMARS at emarsinc.com or call 480-595-0466.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to aroutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75% dandruff, almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat, very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
All right, the case in front of the circuit court judge, Zimmerman, the attorney for Posner, asked the court for a judgment of $1 million. Now, what was awarded to Mr. Posner?
Well, there are several aspects we want to talk about before we get there, but okay. The bottom line is $450,000 by a jury of 12, one man and 11 women, all under the age of 30, every one of whom said they'd never even heard of Alex Jones.
Okay.
They seem to have picked the right venue here of Madison. But listen, John, you were talking about the exhumation, right? I think that would have been a great idea. I was repeatedly making several points with the court that went nowhere. I insisted from the beginning that a fraud was being perpetrated on the court because the man who was the plaintiff in this case was not the same person whose image had been published millions of times around the world as the father of Noah Posner. We had the same Kelly Watt, who had received the death certificate, had noticed a striking similarity between Noah Posner and Michael Vabner, who is supposed to be his older stepbrother. So six of us went to work on this, and we discovered they had the same nose, the same eyes, the same eyebrows, the same mouth, the same ears, the same shape of skull. So I reached out to Larry Rivera, whom I may have mentioned earlier. Larry had done a facial superposition on the figure leaning out of the doorway at the Texas Book Depository, whom we had identified as Lee Oswald on the basis of his height, his weight, his build, his shirt, and his T-shirt, which were the same as the height, the weight, the build, the shirt, and the T-shirt that Lee was wearing when he was arrested. Where the Dallas police were so aware of the similarity, they had him remove his outer shirt, and he was only photographed for his mugshot in his T-shirt, which is why it's so peculiar. They didn't want people reflecting on the similarity. Larry has mastered the principles of photogrammetry, which is the application of mathematics to the study of photographs, and created GIFs where he superimposed the facial features of Lee Oswald and of Billy Lovelady, whom the government insists was actually the person in the doorway, where Billy himself thought it was peculiar anyone would confuse him because he was 2 to 3 inches shorter, 15 to 20 pounds heavier. Plus, he'd been asked by the FBI to come in on the 29th of February, 1964, wearing the same shirt he'd worn on that occasion. It wasn't a long shirt sleeve, richly textured and worn shirt, such as the figure in the doorway was wearing, but a short sleeve, red and white, vertically striped shirt, not at all the same. And when Larry did the superposition, it fit Lee Oswald hand in glove. All the features of the man in the doorway fit Lee Oswald. None of them fit Billy Lovelady. The ears were wrong. The jaw was wrong. Yeah. The nose was wrong. So I sent Larry two photographs, one of the Noah Posner and one of Michael Vabner, and just asked him. He didn't know who these were, didn't know the context, didn't know it had anything to do with Sandy Hook. And he sent me back a GIF where you can see Noah Posner turn into Michael Vabner. Noah Posner was a fiction made up out of photographs of Michael Vabner when he was a child.
All right, folks, next hour we'll entertain your calls at 800-313-9443. By the way, you did say $450,000 judgment against you. Is that just you, or is that the trio?
It's just me. The other two had settled prior to reaching this stage.
They did settle.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, in the one case, Dave said it was to protect the company, and Mike, I know it was because his wife was putting pressure on him.
All right, hold on. We've got to take top of the hour break. It's a hard break. We'll be right back. Second hour of the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stadtmiller. James Fetzer is my guest.
Foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction. A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.